You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. The U.S. Capitol complex went on lockdown today as violent protests broke out during the certification of the Electoral College votes. Hundreds of pro-Trump extremists swarmed the building after President Trump spoke to a large crowd outside the White House, saying he'd never concede to President-elect Joe Biden. NBC News says at least one person was shot by law enforcement. The Senate was evacuated. Vice President Mike Pence was ushered to a secure location. The mayor of Washington, D.C. has ordered a 12-hour curfew beginning at 5 p.m. Central Time. You can join in with your thoughts and reactions at 800-642-1234. What do you think of today's events? What do you want to see happen next? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas at WPR.org. David Schultz is a professor of political science and law at Hamline University and a professor of law at the University of Minnesota. David, welcome back to the show.
Thank you for having me again.
First of all, David, your reaction to this, I think, unprecedented series of events today in the nation's capital.
It's unbelievable in so many ways. I mean, the last time the U.S. Capitol was stormed was the War of 1812, you know, when we were in an armed conflict with another country. Not even during the Civil War, back in the 1860s did we have this. And I just mention it because what supposedly distinguishes us as a stable democracy from, let us say, countries which are less than, you know, firm democracies is that we have peaceful, nonviolent transitions. And this is not an example of a peaceful, nonviolent transition. And not only is it not a good sign domestically in the United States, but it hurts us internationally in terms of our reputation. How do we turn to other countries around the world when we're trying to encourage democracy and human rights, when they can come back and say to us, well, look what happened to you back in 2021. So this is not good from an American's point of view. And I say that, you know, not as a Democrat, not as a Republican or as an independent, but as somebody who says that we should be better than this as a country.
You hit it on an important point. This would be bad enough on a normal run-of-the-mill business day in Congress. This was an attempt to somehow overturn the outcome of the American election.
Yeah. And again, one of the things that we did very early on, you know, doing a little bit of history here, 1800, in some sense, was the most important election in American history. You know, it's the first time when we transitioned from one political party to another, from John Adams to Thomas Jefferson. At that time, they were bitter rivals, and we transitioned peacefully. And we've set almost 220 year record of that peaceful transition from one party control to another, from one president to another. Again, even, you know, we can bracket off the Civil War. Civil War is, you know, it wasn't a peaceful transition in the sense that we did break apart as a country, you know, but for the most part, you know, we have had this pattern of where at the end of the day, losers and winners are gracious and they move on. I think of back in year 2000 when Al Gore had more popular votes George Bush. And as vice president, he had to preside over the Senate and read the electoral votes that gave the victory to the opposition. And he did it gracefully. And again, that's what we hope our country is supposed to be about. This is, again, not a good sign. And it damages us internally and it damages us internationally. And the challenge going forward, I think, within the United States is how do we move forward and repair this damage? Because we have a lot of people, as we're seeing at the Capitol here today, who think that it's perfectly appropriate to resort to force because they didn't like the outcome of the election.
And we've had members of Congress, Republicans included, pleading with the president to go out and say, hey, stop this. Joe Biden tweeted that he would like to see the president-elect would like to see the president make a televised statement. The president released a video telling protesters to go home, but restated his false claims about the election being stolen and told the protesters, we love you, you're very special, but mixed in calls for peace. What do you make of the president's ambiguous message?
Well, it's certainly not enough. It reminds me back to one of the debates with Joe Biden, you know, earlier the or well, last year, of course, where at one point he told what the Proud Boys stand down, but stand by. And many people said that that was sort of a message of really encouraging potentially violence if he didn't win the election. And in some ways, I'm going to connect that statement to what's been happening today, that the president has been unwilling to denounce the violence, the actions in the Capitol. And in some sense, he really is inciting on this type of behavior. I think in terms of the fact that had anybody else said something to the effect of go storm the Capitol and don't give up, et cetera, or something to that effect there, they'd be having a long conversation, you know, with police authorities at this point. So this is bad enough for anybody normally to do this, but for the president of the United States, who's sworn under Article 2 of the Constitution to uphold the Constitution and to uphold the law, to make sure what the laws are faithfully executed, he's doing exactly the opposite of that by encouraging this type of behavior.
We are talking to David Schultz from Hamline University, looking at today's events in the nation's capital. You can join him with your reactions and questions at 800-642-1234. Let's go back to your calls now. Dean is with us in Elkhart Lake. Dean, hello.
Hi. I don't think anybody is surprised at the horrific events in Washington, given what Trump has done repeatedly. But I don't want to lay all of the blame at Trump's doorstep. We've got these crazy Republican congressional people, and unfortunately, two of them are from Wisconsin. Ron Johnson is one of the leaders in promoting these absolutely ridiculous theories about Biden and his son, about the election. And we've got Tom Tiffany up northwestern Wisconsin saying that he's going to be a part of this protest vote as we count electoral college votes.
Dean, thanks a lot for the call. David, do you buy that? Do you draw a line between the Republicans who are going to be, in effect, probably symbolically challenging some of the electoral outcomes in states to the takeover of the Capitol?
I actually think the caller makes a very good point here, is that what people like Senator Johnson and, you know, Ted Cruz, for example, today and others have done is really enabled this type of behavior by the president. And what we're seeing fascinating, and I don't mean that in a good sense, you know, but in a fascinating way, is the divide that's occurring in the Republican Party right now, in an incredible war that you've got. For example, I thought Mitch McConnell's comments today were his finest hour, you know, in terms of a speech about the importance of respecting the democratic process in moving on. We have people like him, like Mitt Romney, Susan Collins, Lisa Murkowski, who are sort of rising to the occasion. And what we're really seeing here now is, and this is beyond sort of, you know, the scene that we're seeing for the country, is a major war going on within the Republican Party in terms of what we're going to wonder what's going to happen in the next year or two. Are we going to see it split in two? What's going to happen to these individuals, you know, who are these people who voted for Trump, who are now at the Capitol? What about these representatives? To what extent do they, and senators, do they share some of the blame? I think we're going to start to see the fallout of this very rapidly.
I want to give a listen to Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell talking earlier before the House and Senate were evacuated, referring some of the comments you just referred to here.
The Constitution gives us here in Congress a limited role. We cannot simply declare ourselves a national board of elections on steroids. The voters, the courts, and the states have all spoken. They've all spoken. If we overrule them, it would damage our republic forever.
David, talk a little more about what we heard from the Senate Majority Leader. Again, this is before the takeover of the Capitol.
What he was pointing out here, several different things, is that one, and I'm going to encapsulate it with what, three words, rule of law. At the end of the day, what he was saying is that the Constitution is clear regarding how we select presidents of the United States. The Constitution and the laws of the states are clear regarding if we have disputes in this country, if we challenge, for example, how elections are being done, our claims about fraud. We have courts to resolve these matters, much in the way, for example, back, you know, a generation ago with Florida 2000. And so what Mitch McConnell defended today was to defend at the end of the day and say there's a process for how we do things. And at the end of the day, the process does not let Congress, does not let the vice president, doesn't let the president of the United States say, I don't like this result, and therefore we're going to do a do-over or erase what the American public has said. And that's why I said before you played the comments here, these are the kind of comments that you want from real leaders. You know, and I give Mitch McConnell significant applause today for making that statement. Unfortunately, it was obviously not enough to discourage the demonstrators. And I'm going to actually say beyond that, not just demonstrators, there were rioters from taking the action they did. But that's really the phrase here. We're about rule of law, about saying we don't resort to guns, to violence, to resolve our disputes. We resort to process, rules, and law. And that's what Mitch McConnell was defending today.
Let's bring on another caller now. Gail is with us in Fish Creek. Gail, hello.
Hi. Well, here we go again. The libertines, they were thrown out of every country in Europe every time they tried to overtake a government in that country. They would get thrown out and go into another one, and now we have them here, and they're disguised as Federalists and Libertarians. The Federalists started in taking over the judicial system and the courts, and the Libertarians fed into the Republican Party, and those are the ones that you see causing all the turmoil. So I don't give Mitch McConnell any credit, because he has been stirring that ripping up of the Republican Party in order to go after the Democrats in a whole different way. They don't look at the Constitution as the way everyone else does. They look at it the way the Federalists do. And the Federalists look at it in a way that they are exempt from that law. And
Gail, thanks for the call. Gail pointing to the Federalist Society and other long-running efforts from Republicans. Is this something different, though, David?
I think it is. I mean, we can have a serious discussion regarding, for example, whether Mitch McConnell was right, you know, 4 years ago in delaying the hearing, you know, on Merrick Garland for the Supreme Court. And there's lots of criticism that could be tossed about that, you know, but what we're seeing today is something different. I don't think the Federalists themselves or the Libertarians, I think it's what she meant, the Libertarians, you know, were ever advocating hitting the streets, you know, with armed conflict. I mean, this is something different. Now, there might be within those organizations extremists, but at the end of the day, the Federalist Society was about saying, and we may not agree with their views, about saying that we have a particular view on American law and the Constitution, and we want to push for it, and we're going to do it and use the process to get us there. That is through nominations, confirmations, and so forth. And that's perfectly legitimate to do, even if you disagree with the outcome. But there's a difference there. Now, are we arguing that their rhetoric enabled this type of behavior? Again, it's possible. Clearly, I'm weighing in on the side of saying that the president's rhetoric over the last 4 years has clearly enabled a lot of behavior in terms of this kind of disregard for process and law that we're really seeing today.
Thanks for that call. We're talking about the violent protests that broke out at the U.S. Capitol building today when the Electoral College votes were supposed to be being counted. David Schultz with us from Hamline University, professor of law also at the University of Minnesota. And with you, you can join in at 800-642-1234 with your reactions and your questions, 800-642-1234, or email ideas@wpr.org. More to come here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Barrett. We continue our coverage of demonstrations by pro-Trump supporters, extremists at the U.S. Capitol this afternoon, a an invasion of the Capitol, in effect, evacuations of all members of Congress and the vice president as they were to be counting Electoral College votes. David Schultz with us from Hamline University, professor of political science and law there and professor of law at the University of Minnesota. You can join in with your thoughts, reactions and questions at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll go back to your calls now. Dennis is with us in Green Bay. Dennis, hi.
Hi. As insane as all these events are, I'm wondering if it could get worse. Could president actually declare martial law?
Dennis, thanks for the call. David, hopefully, obviously, it doesn't come to that. What are your thoughts?
The simple answer is probably no. He could not declare martial law. The Constitution isn't unequivocally clear on this, but most of us would say no. There's some authority under what the Insurrection Act, I can't remember the exact date, of the early 1800s, where you might be able to do something. But in terms of declaring martial law, I would say for the most part, the Constitution is, I'll retract a little bit of my earlier statement. I think the Constitution is relatively clear in terms of saying that he doesn't have the authority to do that. And I'm also going to sort of make a different point here, is that let us say he were to call out the military at this point to intervene. I find it fairly unlikely that the military would respond. There is a very long tradition going back to the beginning of the military staying out of politics. And not that I think the military wants to second guess the president, but I would be skeptical if he were to try to do that, if in fact the Pentagon would respond by bringing troops out. But the simple answer is that I think it's more likely than not he lacks the constitutional authority to declare martial law.
Thanks for that call. And that reminds me, we had this frankly bizarre moment, David, where 10 former secretaries of defense, Democrats, Republicans, two of them appointees of the current president, joined and signed an op-ed saying, no, the United States military should not be used in any way related to the transfer of power. Disturbing that they felt the need to say that now.
Now, I think you're absolutely correct that we generally don't even think of the idea of military transfer of power in elections in the same sentence. And I think they made an incredibly good point. And again, just to underscore, this was bipartisan. And as you pointed out, also people who served in the Trump administration. So at the end of the day, there isn't a mechanism for the president to say, we're going to declare martial law. I'm going to stay in power, et cetera, et cetera. Keep in mind, especially, that at noon on January 20th, he's no longer president of the United States. The Constitution is clear about that. He lacks any authority to be able to do anything at that point. And so that even if he were to try to say, we're going to have martial law, he is no longer in power under our Constitution. And I see no way, shape, or form that anybody's going to honor, even before January 20th, and certainly after January 20th, anything that he says about military intervention in the United States.
Thanks for that call. We'll go to Aaron now in southwestern Wisconsin. Aaron, hi.
Hi. I just wanted to bring up, listening to the show, bringing up some of the history you're looking at in terms of American history is important to look at as well. But I think the true history we really need to be looking at is pre-1930s and the rise of fascism throughout Europe, including Hitler and the SS, and those people making the same kinds of claims in terms of propaganda and unfounded, accusations to a horrible level, and thus gaining power.
Aaron, thanks for the call. David, thank you for the call, Aaron. David, I mean, I think a lot of times people look at that connection, Weimar Germany in the 1920s, and say, well, wait a minute, this was a brand new elected government. No, large portions of the population across the political spectrum didn't like it. It had no legitimacy. We're safe from this kind of thing in the United States because we've got this longer track record. Do you feel secure in that way?
Yes, I do. Again, that Weimar Germany was unusual in lots of ways. It was a weak, not very stable democracy to start with. It had significant, let's say, economic and social problems. I mean, there were tremendous problems there that we were looking at. Not to say that our democracy is not without some flaws, because there clearly are. But again, think about the speeches that we heard today when you played earlier from Mitch McConnell. At the end of the day, what we're seeing is that most Republicans, most Democrats, independents are all united behind a set of values and process that we didn't see in Nazi Germany with the rise of what was happening at that point. And so I think there are some critical differences there in terms of the stability of our institutions versus, I was going to say, the relative lack of stability of the institutions then. But having said that, there still is a worry out there. We can connect, let us say, McCarthyism to let us say, some of the economic deprivation and inequalities in the society, to some of the rhetoric, perhaps, of the president, of creating an atmosphere that clearly is not conducive to what we'd normally like to say as stable American democratic values.
Time for one more caller in this segment, though we're going to keep talking about these issues coming up on Central Time. Let's go to Randy now in Madison. Randy, hi.
Yes, good afternoon. I think Donald Trump can wave goodbye to his Nobel Peace Prize and getting his face on Mount Rushmore. But I think both of which are pretty delusional anyway. But I think we have such a track record of delusion that even with 13 days left in his reign, I think Congress should be looking at invoking the 25th Amendment. I think the mental deterioration in both senses of the word is become so, you know, it's hitting us over the head.
Thanks for the call. I'm looking at a press release that I've tracked through their website, the National Association of Manufacturers, saying the cabinet should invoke the 25th Amendment to preserve democracy, quoting there. In our last minute and a half or so, David, do you see something like that happening, 25th Amendment or a quick impeachment?
I don't see either of them, although the conditions are there for both of them. I could see Congress doing an impeachment, but again, the process of impeachment and then conviction in the Senate would take time. I don't know whether or not there's enough will among the vice president and his cabinet to basically take him out of office, you know, for the rest of the term, although one can make a good case. But I also want to use this as an opportunity to make a different argument here and say that later, you know, we should be thinking later on now about presidential transitions. Granted, this is the only one that we've had a problem with here, but we're one of the only countries in the world that after an election, we have such a long transition time and the government, that is the president, still has all this authority. Many other countries, presidents have vastly limited authority during the transition period. And we should be thinking about that here. But again, the 25th Amendment is a possible remedy for addressing some of these things. I just don't see, at least in the short term, the next 24 to 40 hours that happening, but it's a possibility.
Thanks for that call. And David, thanks for joining us again.
Sure. We'll be back in a half hour, or a few minutes, rather, I should say.
That's right. Sorry, David Schultz stays with us, professor of political science and law at Hamline University. More conversation coming up about today's events in the nation's capital. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, Charlie Sykes joins the program to talk about the unrest at the nation's capital. Now we continue our breaking news coverage of the violent protests at the U.S. Capitol complex in Washington, D.C. Hundreds of pro-Trump extremists stormed the building during a joint session of Congress this afternoon. Lawmakers had begun the certification process for Joe Biden's win in November, an election that President Trump insists falsely was stolen. At least one person was reportedly shot by law enforcement. All members of Congress were evacuated. Vice President Pence was taken to a secure location. Washington, D.C., scheduled to be under curfew for 12 hours. That began at 5 o'clock, or begins at 5 o'clock Central Time. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What is your reaction to today's events? What do you think? What do you want to see happen next? Who do you want to be hearing from right now? What do you want to hear from them? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. I want to give a listen to Wisconsin Congressman Mike Gallagher, critical of the storming of the Capitol. This is from a Twitter video he posted at around 2 o'clock today.
This is the cost of this effort. This is the cost of countenancing an effort by Congress to overturn the election and telling thousands of people that there is a legitimate shot of overturning the election today, even though you know that is not true. We have got to stop this. Mr. President, you have got to stop this. You are the only person who can call this off. Call it off.
David Schultz stays with us, professor of political science and law at Hamline University and professor of law at the University of Minnesota. David, we heard Wisconsin's Mike Gallagher, Republican congressman there. We're seeing a number of Republicans critical of the protest turned insurrection, of the president's handling of it. What are you hoping to hear from Republicans, maybe even those who had been supporting this effort up to this point?
What I'd like to hear him say at this point is speak in one voice about saying that this is unacceptable behavior. And I actually would like to see, but I don't think we're going to, I'd like to see the Republicans really who are challenging the election returns, electoral vote count in the Senate and the House, basically to say that it's time to walk away, because Congress really doesn't have the right, despite what the law, what they think the law says, to really second guess what the states, what the people, and what the Constitution says about the Electoral College and electing the President of the United States. So, in some sense, it would be great for them to say what we've done, we're not going to pursue anymore, and just say at this point that Joe Biden has won, and encourage everybody to, you know, basically move on, and in the process condemn these rioters.
Let's go back to our callers now at 800-642-1234. Ryan is with us in Superior. Ryan, hello.
Hey. Well, I would like to let everyone in Wisconsin remember that both Ron Johnson and Tom Tiffany had a hand in this, because of the fact that they were willing to support Trump all the way in his baseless allegations. Everyone in Wisconsin, remember that. Remember what those guys were doing, and remember who that they decided to stand for and what the end result of this was.
Ryan, thanks for the call, referring to Wisconsin Senator Ron Johnson, Wisconsin Congressman Tom Tiffany. Both were planning on challenging electoral slate outcomes today. Tiffany had also signed on to the Texas Attorney General's lawsuit that would have overturned Wisconsin's election outcome, among others. Today we've heard Senator Ron Johnson tweeted, "Please, if you're in or around the Capitol, respect law enforcement and peacefully disperse." And again, quoting his tweet, "The Capitol Police have acted with incredible professionalism. I sincerely thank them for their service and condemn all lawless activity." What do you think? Do you think that Ryan has something there, David? People will hold this against some of these members of Congress, or is this something that will fade?
Well, clearly, we oftentimes talk about how the American voter has a short memory. I suspect, though, that many of the Democrats, you know, running in 2022 are going to bring this up. And I also just don't think that this is an event today that's going to be easily forgotten. But when we think about, and I'm not sure when Senator Johnson's up for election again, I don't know, is it 2 years or 4 years from now?
2 years.
Okay. I suspect any Democrat who's challenging him is going to be bringing up today in terms of an argument against him. And it's even possible, and I think, again, this is something that's really interesting here, is that even within the Republican Party, I think we're going to start to see, as I mentioned earlier, a significant division over these issues. Was it earlier yesterday? Paul Ryan came out, you know, in terms of talking about the importance of really respecting, you know, what the Electoral College vote and the elections were about. And so I see a lot of movement even within the Republican Party in terms of possible challenges. And I also do see that this is going to be an issue in 2022. Already.
And Paul Ryan had suggested, and other members of Congress leading up, Republican members of Congress had said, hey, wait a minute, overturning the election is not a conservative position. They made the case this is a radical position. And it seems there's a division that's been papered over sometimes by agreements over things like judge appointments, tax cuts, deregulation, between a vision of the Republican Party as an ideological party with, you know, certain clear platforms, and a party mm-hmm. of loyalty to one person, Donald Trump. And here they are colliding. How do you see this resolving now?
So you're absolutely correct. I mean, if we can make that distinction, some people have had it make between what, let's say, Donald Trump, the Republican Party. Some people have called it what the Trumpistas, depending on or Trumpism, whatever it may be. I mean, we really sort of have an issue here. Is the Republican Party more than Donald Trump? And now that he's not going to be president anymore, you know, within 15 days, the Republican Party needs to think about what its future is. Even without Donald Trump, the Republican Party is looking at a longer term existential problem. And what I mean by that, after Mitt Romney lost to Barack Obama in 2012, the Republican Party did some soul searching and suggested that it needs to change its positions, to reach out to people of color, to reach out to women. And it was suggesting then that it was worried about kind of a demographic existential problem. I think now it's got an even bigger problem that if it stays identified with Donald Trump, I think it's going to place in people's minds, again, the events of today and all about, you know, Donald Trump in terms of what his presidency meant for 4 years versus do they now have a serious debate and really a movement to sort of redefine the Republican Party. I know about a year or two ago, there were many Republicans, sort of mainstream Republicans, who said that one of the best things that could happen to the Republican Party would be for Trump to lose in 2020 so that they could reinvent the party. And what we're getting now is we're at that point. What does the Republican Party look like beyond Donald Trump? And we do need to have in this country at least two viable parties for our democracy to work.
Let's go back to our callers now. We've got Roger on the line in Madison. Roger, hi.
Hi. As far as I'm concerned, the only thing that's news today is the level of denial that's been involved in this becoming a surprise. Mr. Trump has been inflating this toxic balloon since before he was president-elect, when he said that he would not trust the vote unless it elected him. And he's been slowly but surely pumping this up until it burst today.
Roger, thanks for that call. Roger saying, I think a lot of people are saying today, David, the president, and before he was president, said again and again he would not respect the outcome of an election if he didn't win it. And I think there was a lot of, but of course he really would from Republicans, I think even from a lot of Democrats. Do you think Roger has something there?
I think he makes a good point here that Donald Trump, way before he even ran for president, you know, even when Barack Obama was running and winning, consistently criticized the process and saying that what? That Barack Obama was fraudulently elected. Remember also, Donald Trump was one of the strongest advocates of sort of the birther argument, you know, that Barack Obama was not born in the United States. I mention this because to a large extent, Donald Trump has really peddled a lot of falsehoods. I've lost track now. What the Washington Post said at one point, what was it, well over 10,000 or 11,000, you know, lies or, you know, misstatements during the presidency. And so in some sense, you know, what's really come to a point now is that, and I think the listener is bringing up here, says we shouldn't be surprised by the fact that this is a president who said that he wasn't going to give up, that he wasn't going to concede. The president has said that today. I think most of us were, I think, surprised at the degree to which he was sort of encouraging this type of behavior. But at the end of the day, he clearly has helped create the atmosphere for the toxicity that we've seen boiling over today at the Capitol.
We're talking about the violence at the U.S. Capitol by pro-Trump extremists with David Schultz, professor of political science and law at Hamline University, professor of law at the University of Minnesota. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Tell us what you think about what's going on today, what you hope to see happen next. Call 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation about the violent protests at the U.S. Capitol by Trump supporters. David Schultz is with us, professor of political science and law at Hamline University, professor of law at the University of Minnesota. You can join in with your thoughts and reactions at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll go back to your calls now. We've got John on the line in West Salem. John, hi.
Hi. I've been listening throughout the day, and I just wanted to point out maybe a concern that I'm having is that, and correct me if I'm wrong, the word certification when it comes to what's happening today is what I've noticed on the NPR programs and the ads and stuff that they're using. And I'm just concerned and wondering if maybe it's leading to some people with the events that are transpiring today to them to raise their ire or be more concerned that Biden may not be president on the 20th. You know, they may feel that, okay, if it has to be certified, it's not official. And to my understanding, constitutionally, he is the president. It is official. And that this is a formality. It's not a certification process. And that would be great for clarification. And that is what I would have to say.
That's a great comment, John. It's what I think about myself, and I tried to make myself steer clear of the word certification from today. The state's electors, their elections outcomes have been certified. The electors have cast their votes. In effect today, David, this is the day when Congress counts these already certified electoral votes. Do I have that right?
You're correct. This is more ceremonial today than anything else. Once the Electoral College cast its ballots, it really was over. What we saw today, what was supposed to happen today, was just basically kind of the formality process. I don't know. I was trying to think what the ribbon and bow on whatever. I'm just trying to.
I've
think
seen
of
people
the right
say
metaphor.
Like the Academy Award. If I'm going to announce the award, I open the envelope. I don't decide who won it. Maybe I get it wrong for a few seconds, but I don't decide who won it. I read what's in the envelope.
Correct. This whole process here was a consequence of situations back in the 1870s and 1880s when there were genuine disputes over which delegation of electoral votes to recognize from different states. You know, I think it was like several different states. And that's when Congress had to make a decision at that point. But at the end of the day, the only time that the House of Representatives gets to pick the president of the United States is if a person didn't get a majority of the electoral votes. Otherwise, the Constitution's clear. The Supreme Court has made it clear. The states pick the president of the United States. And also keep in mind that, so your listener is absolutely 100% right on this. Again, the Constitution is unequivocally clear that the president's term expires at noon on January 20th. But let's just sketch this out. Let's say for some reason the protesters are able to prevent this process from going forward, and that under the most extreme interpretation, which is not correct, that Biden is not able to be seated on January 20th for whatever reason. Keep in mind at that point, if President Trump's term has expired, which it has, also means that Vice President Mike Pence's term has expired. Under the Presidential Succession Act of 1947, the Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, becomes president acting president. So no matter what happens, at the end of the day, Trump is done on January 20th, and disrupting the process today doesn't prevent that eventuality.
Thanks a lot for that call at 800-642-1234. Let's go to Alex next, calling from Prairie du Chien. Alex, hi.
Hi. I just wanted to throw in my two cents here. This is straight up fascism. We've known this for years. Trump is a fascist. He's been sowing the seeds of discontent the distrust of free press, quote, fake news, alternative facts. During the election, it wasn't about the facts of the votes. It was about loyalty. And we saw that in the Republican representatives. It was about the loyalty to the president. He talked about he would not give up power. That's fascist. He admires dictators and fascists all around the world. We shouldn't be surprised by this. This siege, I hope he's held personally responsible. And the representatives who are disputing the certification, they are enabling, and they should be possibly tried as traitors to the country. Thank you.
Alex, thanks for the call. Fascism, I know political scientists have definitions of it, David, but accusations of fascistic leanings or authoritarian leanings more commonly made about the president. What do you think when you hear that?
Well, we always should be hesitant about sort of labeling somebody as a fascist and about fascism. But many of the elements that the listener brought in here in terms of attacking the press, attacking the process, sort of the appeals to at least his, you know, the president's version of law and order. I mean, and there are a lot of elements here that fit into sort of classic definitions of fascism, which is really, let's say, you know, significant, you know, populism, mass society without respect for rule of law, without respect for individual rights. And so we have a lot of those elements in place right now. And today really has been, on one level, a very dangerous moment in American history. And again, luckily, saner minds are prevailing in at this point within both parties of saying that we got to scale back. And also, I'm going to say that I can't think of anybody right now that I know of who is openly saying this is a good thing of what's happening. And perhaps this is sort of a defining moment in America of saying that we need to start to draw lines on the type of behavior and rhetoric that's considered to be acceptable within American politics.
Thanks for the call. We're talking to David Schultz from Hamline University about today's events at the nation's capital. Some more response from Wisconsin. Governor Tony Evers tweeting a series of tweets, as are so many Wisconsinites and Americans. I am watching these horrifying events unfold in Washington, D.C. in disbelief. The peaceful transfer of power is at the very heart of our government and our country. This is an attack on our democracy, period. He goes on, there must be swift bipartisan condemnation in no uncertain terms by the president, by elected officials who have sought to sow division and distrust our election, by elected officials who have failed to unequivocally denounce these efforts, all of which fed in today's events. Robin Voss, Republican Assembly Leader in Wisconsin. What is occurring in our nation's capital is appalling and must stop. Violent protests, destruction of property, threatening or hurting innocent people have no place in our democratic republic. I encourage those who would like to express their frustration, do so peacefully. Those two don't agree on many things often, David.
They really don't agree on too many things. And that's what the point I was just making before you referred to them is that there may be there's still legitimate partisan disagreement out there. But what we're seeing here, and this distinguishes us from let's say Germany 1931 or 1930, is that we still enjoy very broad support in this country regarding, again, basic rule of law and process. Now, I also want to point out here that, yes, what was it, about 70 million people voted for Donald Trump? I'm going to argue that 99.999% of them are not endorsing what's happening today.
Let's go back to our callers now. Michael is on the line in Milwaukee. Michael, hello.
Hi, guys. I haven't had a chance to keep up on this. I'm pretty much listening to what you guys are talking about, and I heard a little bit on the other NPR station. So I haven't really seen videos, but I do know that they said that the police were told not to use force. And I feel that because majority of Trump supporters are, in fact, white, that if it wasn't the case that it was more like maybe a BLM protest or another ethnic group, that the police response would probably have been different. And I think we need to think about that, especially with the racial injustice that's going on right now.
Michael, thanks for the call. A lot of people making that point after this year's protests, which did sometimes segue into looting and violence and the difference in the police response we're seeing here. David, do you have any thoughts on that?
I think that's a really, really astute observation here. The police should not have responded with the use of force for the peaceful demonstrations, you know, for Black Lives Matters of that. Now, I live in St. Paul, Minnesota, not very far from where George Floyd was killed. We know Minneapolis had the peaceful demonstrations, but there were violent protests. So I want to distinguish between the peaceful protests versus reaction to violent ones in terms of what would happen here. But having said that, it would have been a dangerous mixture today in terms of, let us say, the police responded with a significant show of force, because I don't know if we wanted to have this spectacle of what, of a massive shootout, you know, within the United States Capitol. You know, this is a part where I'm not sure what the right answer is in terms of how do you respond to this violence. Do you try to de-escalate, which ought to be the first solution? Do you send in proverbially send in the Marines, or what do you do? But again, the listener makes a good point here in terms of the racial disparity in approach of how for the last few years, especially since George Floyd's death, how we've approached different demonstrations in different ways. But again, remember today, this is a violent demonstration. This is not a peaceful protest.
Thanks for that call. And David, we'll leave it there. Thank you for taking the time today. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you very much for having me. And thank you to the listeners.
David Schultz is a professor of political science and law at Hamline University and professor of law at the University of Minnesota. We talked to him today about the lockdown on Capitol Hill, the protests that erupted during the certification process of the Electoral College votes, the evacuation of the Capitol, and the political reaction. Coming up, we talked to former longtime conservative radio talk show host Charlie Sykes about the protests and the invasion of the U.S. Capitol. I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. Listening to Central Time, I'm Rob Ferret. Right now, we continue our ongoing conversations about protests on the nation's capital by pro-Trump extremists that turn into a takeover, in effect, of the nation's capital. President Trump has been making baseless claims that he won the election by a landslide, urging his base to protest the results. Today, he told protesters in Washington to march on Congress. As U.S. lawmakers gathered to count those results, extremists breached the Capitol and broke into offices and chambers, resulting in evacuation, bringing the certification of the electoral vote to a temporary halt. In a video, Trump later urged his supporters to respect law enforcement. In the same message, he insisted the election had been stolen. Charlie Sykes joins us now, founder and editor-in-large of The Bulwark, a conservative political journal. He's a former longtime conservative radio talk show host on WTMJ in Milwaukee. You could join in with your reactions, questions, and thoughts at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Charlie, welcome back to Central Time.
It's good to be here.
Your reaction, first of all, to what's been going on, what's still going on today in Washington, D.C., Charlie?
Well, it's about as appalling a scene as we've ever seen. I was just reading a historian who said this is the first time that Congress has been breached since the War of 1812. Look, this is a fundamental attack on our constitutional system of government. It was incited by the President of the United States. There's no way to gloss around that. Whatever word you want to use, this is not simply a protest. This is an insurrection, with the goal of shutting down Congress, performing one of its most fundamental acts. One of the first things that Congress, this is like one of the oldest responsibilities of the U.S. Congress. When the Constitution was ratified, one of the first things they had to do was to count the Electoral College votes to elect George Washington as President of the United States. This is a fundamental act. And what the president did was to incite this mob to go to the Capitol, to shut down this process, to intimidate our elected officials. If this is not a coup d'etat or an attempted coup d'etat, I don't know what the word would actually mean.
Charlie, you have spent really the last, I don't know, 5 years or so warning fellow conservatives, former friends, I think, of the Republican Party, yeah, about Donald Trump as the standard bearer for the party. Do you think they're coming around to your point of view now, after today?
Well, I don't know whether coming around to my point of view, I think it's hard for to be it's hard for me to imagine that the scales have not dropped from their eyes. You're right. For 5 years, you know, some of us have been saying this is a mistake to put this much power in the hands of a demagogue like Donald Trump. It was always going to end this way. It was always going to end in tears. But even more so, it was going to do tremendous and perhaps even irreversible damage to the fabric of this country. And for the last 5 years, I really have been wondering and wrestling with the question: why don't they see what I think is probably obvious about Donald Trump and who Donald Trump was? But of course, we would not have come to this moment that we're at right now had the Republican Party not completely caved into Donald Trump, had they not acquiesced to Donald Trump, had they not enabled him, had they not gone along and looked the other way. He has taken this as a green light to behave in a manner that no president of the United States has, not only that no president has ever done, no president has ever even thought of behaving the way that Donald Trump is behaving right now. I will say one more thing. For the last, you know, several months, I have been warning on my daily podcast. I raise the question almost daily: how worried should we be about violence? How worried should we be that his supporters will take what he is saying literally? Because at a certain point, understand, he has been spending months piling up the cordwood of lies and incendiary rhetoric and pouring kerosene on it. And if he does convince his supporters that this election has been stolen, that the country is under attack, then there's a certain logical consistency to those who feel they can engage in violence. And so I've been doing this on a daily basis. How concerned should we be, especially people who have believed these lies? And I have to say that there was a time, there have been a couple of moments where I thought, am I exaggerating this? Am I being too high strung about this? Maybe it'll just pass, it will resolve itself. But I will tell you that even having done this on a daily basis, what is happening right now is genuinely shocking and ought to be shocking to any American.
Talking to Charlie Sykes, longtime radio host, editor-at-large, and founder of The Bulwark. You can join in at 800-642-1234 as we talk about today's events at the nation's capital. We'll go to our callers now. Marlene is with us in Nakusa. Marlene, hi.
Hello.
What did you want to bring up, Marlene?
I just wanted to say, I know that our president is a jerk, but I also feel that he has not been given credit for what he has tried to do. In my heart, I feel he cares about our country and that he, for example, jobs and stopping this with China. Well, the platform, I just totally agree with. I am not condoning the riots. I agree. I'm just saying from day one, the media, I cannot believe that was the start of it.
Marlene, thanks for the call. Marlene, saying Charlie, the media didn't give Donald Trump a fair shake, I guess, and that accounts for why people are so worked up now.
No, that's not what's happening right now. What's happening is, and again, I guess I disagree respectfully with the caller. I don't believe that Donald Trump cares about the country, otherwise he wouldn't be putting the country through this. Donald Trump cares about himself, and I think that that's being illustrated in real time, that he is willing to push this country to the brink of violence, perhaps even civil war, in order to protect himself. I mean, I will tell you that this is beyond right-left politics. This is not Republican or Democrat. This is not about, you know, his stand on taxes or how many judges he's appointed. This is a president who has been and is actively undermining the most fundamental norms of the American constitutional system. And I think that it would behoove everyone, Republicans, conservatives, liberals, everyone, to say, okay, whoa, this goes too far. We can't tolerate this.
Thanks for the call. We'll go to John now in Green Bay. John, hi.
Hey, Charlie. Just want to first say thank you for being consistent with your principles. And second, I've been a lifelong Republican until Trump got elected. And I'm just utterly disgusted with the actions and some of the things that people like Ron Johnson and Senator Ted Cruz have been doing and saying, basically inciting sedition and treason and giving in to the basest, whims of the president. I'm politically homeless now, and I'm kind of confused what to do from here. But wanted to kind of express my thoughts and say thank you for your consistency.
John, thanks a lot for the call. Charlie, you and John on the same page, not sticking with the Republicans under Trump. There aren't that many of you. Do you see a place for our caller and yourself in a new political, I don't know, movement, party, something?
I don't know. And maybe we're going to see the birth of it coming out of the flames of all of this. I just don't know. I am also politically homeless. I'm glad the caller also mentioned the role that some of the senators have played in fueling this fire. By irresponsibly trying to delay the Electoral College vote. Look, this race is not seriously contested. No rational person thinks that Donald Trump won this election. He tried to have it overturned in the courts. He failed. He tried to get his Department of Justice to find evidence of fraud. That failed. He tried to go to state legislatures to get them to reverse it. That failed. He, you know, called up election officials, tried to bully them to get them to overturn it. That failed. As recently as today, he was trying to get the vice president of the United States to violate the law and try to not count the electoral votes. That failed. And now we're resorting to violence. But this, I don't know that we would have come to this had he not been enabled by people like Ted Cruz and our own Senator Ron Johnson, who irresponsibly used their office to advance these false, baseless claims in these conspiracy theories. And Ron Johnson in particular, and I'm a former supporter of Ron Johnson. It is stunning to me that Ron Johnson is possibly going to vote to disenfranchise all of the voters of his own state, that he's going to wipe out all of our votes based on no evidence whatsoever. To me, that is simply disqualifying for anybody in public office.
Thanks for that call. I wanted to ask you a little more about Senator Johnson. As you mentioned, you were a supporter. Dan Bice was on the show this week referring to Ron Johnson 2.0, a changed Ron Johnson from the senator when he was first elected. What do you make of his political evolution?
Boy, I don't know. I appreciate Dan's referral to that, because the Ron Johnson that I knew, I thought was going to be an independent maverick. I thought he was going to be in the mode of Bill Proxmire. I did not think he was going to be in the mode of Joe McCarthy, a former senator from Wisconsin. But yeah, the Ron Johnson we're seeing now, who has gone down some pretty strange rabbit holes of QAnon conspiracies, Russia hoax conspiracies, all of this. I honestly, I've been asked this many, many times. I can't really explain to you what happened to him or what happened to so many people on the right, because And maybe I was just simply naive, but I will tell you this, that what Johnson is doing is grotesquely irresponsible and has contributed to what we are going through right here. So, yes, we need to hold Donald Trump accountable. We need to hold the rioters and the insurrectionists accountable. But we also need to hold these elected officials like Ted Cruz, Ron Johnson, and Josh Hawley also accountable for playing with matches with our Constitution.
Charlie Sykes is with us, founder and editor-at-large of The Bulwark. You can read his work, listen to his podcast there. We're looking at the situation at the U.S. Capitol today, the politics behind it, and what comes next. Still time for your calls at 800-642-1234. We'll continue the conversation, hear from more of you, coming up here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. We continue our conversation with Charlie Sykes, former longtime conservative radio talk show host on WTMJ in Milwaukee, now editor-at-large of The Bulwark, a conservative political journal he founded. You can join in at 800-642-1234 as we talk about today's events in the nation's capital. Let's go back to your calls now. Jim is with us in Cedarburg. Jim, hi.
Hey, can you hear me okay?
Yep, go for it, Jim.
I love what you do.
Thanks.
Charlie, I have to agree with everything you've said here today. But I tell you, the mob that we see today is a product of the conspiracy theories like what right-wing radio espouses daily. And the question I have for you, Charlie, is, hey, you were part of, you know, right-wing conservative radio for a long time in this area. maybe not beating the drum that Trump has been, but, you know, so many years of Walker really, really did a number on our state. That's how I feel.
Jim, thanks a lot for the call. Charlie?
Well, yes, I was a conservative talk show host, and it is appalling to me to watch what's happened to the conservative media. I originally thought that we were going to be the other side of the story and spent a great deal of time doing that. And I do think that, you know, the caller raises questions, you know, to what extent did any of us contribute to all of this over the years? But I also think that we need to understand how things have shifted so radically over the last several years. The ease with which demagogues are able to spread lies, not just through talk radio, but through the internet, on networks like Fox News, OAN, Newsmax, and the way this has polluted our political discourse. So there's no question about it. In order to understand what's going on here, you need to understand the fact that a lot of people have marinated in these kinds of falsehoods and stories, and there are cynical politicians like Donald Trump and Ted Cruz and Josh Hawley who are prepared to exploit that for their own personal benefit. But this is the thing that I guess is so, you know, even though I've been warning about it, I'm still like just appalled to see it come to fruition. You know, how did we think this was going to end? What did you think was going to happen if you lied to people and said that, you know, your country was going to be destroyed? They were stealing the election. These are Chinese communists. They hate God. They hate America. How did you think people would react? And I will tell you right now, Rob, this doesn't end with the siege of the Capitol. These folks are not going, you know, many of them honestly and sincerely do not understand that Donald Trump lost this election, will not accept the verdict of the voters, and will not accept and fully expected that Donald Trump would get another 4 years in office. And so one of the things that concerned me the most was what will happen when they realize that's not going to happen? What's going to happen when they run up against reality? And I think you're starting to see some of it. But my fear is we're only starting to see what's going to be happening here. And the president has built this. He has flamed, you know, and he continues to inflame it. And this is an incredibly dangerous moment. The next 2 weeks are very, very dangerous for the country.
Let's go back to our callers. Bob is with us in Lac-des-Flambeau. Bob, hi.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. What'd you want to bring up, Bob?
Good. I wanted to give a shout out to our military leaders, and to the men and women, all the men and women who serve. The only difference between a successful Banana Republic style coup and what we're seeing today is a military that cannot be bribed, bullied, bought off, or whatever. And their integrity has made this a totally different situation than it would have been in many other countries that have experienced this type of a maniac in the position of power.
Bob, thanks for the call. And Charlie, earlier in the afternoon, I referred to the letter recently from 10 former secretaries of defense, including two of Trump's own appointees and other Republicans plus Democrats. Bob's thinking this is good news that we don't have to worry about a military coup.
He is right. And I'm really glad you brought that up, because on my Bulwark podcast yesterday, I sat down with Eric Edelman, who's a former Deputy Secretary of Defense for Policy, former Ambassador to Finland, a variety of other things. And he was one of the guys that pulled this letter together, because he worked with Dick Cheney. And he got every single living former Secretary of Defense to sign on this letter. And I asked him, why did you do it? Why did you think, what were you seeing that alarmed these guys so much that they would sign a letter warning the military, do not get involved in all of this? And it's very interesting. You think about the range of people: Donald Rumsfeld, Dick Cheney, James Mattis, Mark Esper, Democratic defense secretaries. And they were so concerned that Donald Trump in this period of time would find an excuse to try to abuse his power as commander in chief that they signed this open letter, which basically was both a warning but also encouragement to the military not to violate the law by going along with this. And I have to say that for people sitting back going, oh, that will never happen, these are serious men. They're all men. They're very serious guys. They know a lot. They know how fragile our system is. And that letter itself, especially given the events of today, certainly seems prescient.
We are talking to Charlie Sykes, founder and editor-at-large of The Bulwark, a longtime conservative radio talk show host here in Wisconsin, looking at today's events in the nation's capital. Let's go back to your calls now. Vic is with us in Amherst Junction. Vic, hello.
Yeah. Yes, thank you so much for having me on. A question that baffles me, if I was a leader and I went here in the Stevens Point area to the county building and said and stood up there and incited violence and then went and had a coffee at the local, to protect myself, well, this crowd who respects me would go out and cause violence in the county building, wouldn't I go to jail? Isn't this what the president did today? Is this not treason? Am I missing something? Is that too extreme? I just don't, I'm not getting it here.
Vic, thanks for the call. Charlie, consequences for President Trump?
Yeah. Well, I don't know what the word treason is, right? But sedition gets close to it. The incitement to violence. Look, I think Congress would be well within its rights after it finishes counting the Electoral College votes, which I think it should finish tonight. They would be well within their rights and justified to vote out another set of articles of impeachment based on this and to remove Donald Trump from office. And I am not alone in saying that. Now, I'm not saying that's going to happen, but the reality is that may be the only check on this president at this point, because we are now seeing what he is doing and what he is prepared to do. So I don't know that that's going to, I don't think that's going to happen. But I noticed the NAACP came out in favor of that. I noticed the editor of Commentary Magazine came out in favor of that. But at some point, members of Congress need to say, if the president is responsible for this attack on this institution, if he did, and we don't know all the facts, did he tell the National Guard to stand down? Is this what he wants? Is he in any way responsible for shutting down Congress? And people need to understand that we're not talking about broken windows here. We're not talking about protesters who went into a room they're not supposed to be into. We are talking about a concerted effort to stop the government of the United States, the Congress of the United States, from fulfilling a core constitutional responsibility. Now, that strikes me as falling under the definition of sedition, and it is certainly impeachable.
Charlie, I've seen reports, statements from Senator Lindsey Graham and Senator Joe Manchin, possibly there are others, saying let's still get this Electoral College count done and let's get back into the Capitol today. If it can be done safely, are you hoping that happens and this gets picked up still tonight?
Yes, absolutely. Otherwise, this extremist insurrection succeeded. And I know that's going to be difficult. I know it may mean that they go all night. But that's how the Constitution is protected. That's how democracy is resilient. If you basically say, you tried to stop us, this was the goal. I mean, this has been Donald Trump's goal, is to block this certification, to block his defeat. And so I think we need to understand this as a very real challenge to American democracy. And I think that they need to go back and do it. And I hope that the demagogues who have been threatening to challenge the votes will back off now that they've seen it. I don't expect that will happen. But even if they have to go all night, I think they need to do it, yes.
And briefly, if you had a line to Senator Ron Johnson, one of those lawmakers you just referred to, what would you say to him?
You should be ashamed of yourself.
We'll leave it there. Charlie, thanks for joining us again.
Thank you.
Charlie Sykes is the founder and editor-at-large of The Bulwark, a conservative political journal, former longtime conservative radio talk show host on WTMJ in Milwaukee. We talked to him about the insurrection at the U.S. Capitol building. You can hear more tomorrow on The Morning Show and here on Central Time about the situation, the reaction, what we'll know by then, and more political back and forth about what comes next and possibly the count of the Electoral College votes that were supposed to happen today. Coming up today, it's special coverage from NPR as we continue to follow the situation in Washington, D.C., where pro-Trump protesters stormed the U.S. Capitol. Curfew set to go into effect in the nation's capital momentarily. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.